And now for another episode, Heard It Through the Rose Vine, with your host, the creator of Black Rose Writing, Raygun Brody.
Greetings, salutations. This is Raygun Brody, the host of Heard It Through the Rose Vine, signing on for another episode. And yes, we are still here with episode number 14. I've got a few more good questions from authors. Got a few calendar and some exciting news, and then we will get to our interview with upcoming Black Rose Writing author Dan Lawton. We've interviewed a lot of our veteran authors. Dan Lawton is yet to be released. So that should be a little different angle of an interview, is getting a first-time Black Rose Writing author that's still in the pre-order stage and in the publishing process. We've got some great book bubs coming up. Simon Grave and the Curious Cat. Lynn Boswell is getting a book bub feature deal on August 3rd. No Rest for the Wicked by Phoebe Darkling is August 5th, and Dollhouse getting a big free day, a rare free day for John Hunt's Dollhouse on August 11th. And so those are just a few. Some other exciting news: if you're a indie author and use Amazon Ads, is the Amazon Ad Marketplace has added tracking for KENP, which is the Kindle Unlimited Pages Read. So that'll give you just a little bit more insight to whether the amount of money you're spending versus, you know, what you think you're making, or how it's affecting your, you know, your daily income as an author, your royalty income. It'll be more advantageous and allow you to make a little better decisions by not having to guess and say, okay, I know my book sold this many and it looks like the pages read is pretty far up, so I'm attributing that to the Amazon ad now. Anytime someone clicks on an Amazon ad link and they are a KU subscriber and they read 100 pages of your book, it gets tracked right there and attributed. So that's a pretty cool and exciting feature. And if you're a reader and the listener of this podcast, please don't forget to subscribe to the Rose Vine. We just gave away some more paperbacks, and we give away free books and make announcements on promotion codes and discounts. And we will be giving away 5 more paperback copies at the end of this month. So make sure you subscribe to the Rose Vine. So I've got some podcast questions. The first one I've got here is from Black Rose Writing author Jill Hand, the author of White Oaks, and she's got an upcoming book, Black Willows, releasing soon. Jill wants to talk about that second book. She wants to know what is the best way to publicize a follow-up to a first book in a series. And so I think the timely, you know, releasing books in a timely manner. So for Black Rose, we try to stay around. The fastest turnaround is 5 to 6 months. I know some other publishers like to do kind of a series out real quick. But we usually do 5 or 6 months minimum, and then a year max. Anything over that, I think your readers start to begin to lose interest, begin to forget about your other book, forget about you as an author. So, you know, if you can have a second book release within 6 to 9 months of your first book and it's a series, I think those are all, it's all very important. Also, another good way is if you're collecting, you know, subscribers and building a subscriber mailing list, that is essential for a series, because now everyone that you've collected, that, you know, say you've got 1,000 readers that have read your first book on that list, you're going to be able to contact them directly about your second book. So you're going to be able to give them that reminder that they want, and send them a personal email campaign to let them know, you know, when your book two is available for pre-order or when there's a discount or anything. So that's another good step. And then also, I think just once book two is fully available, if it's available for print and ebook and, you know, hopefully audio and all formats and ready to roll, pre-order or release, I think doing ebook promotion or advertising for book one is going to, you know, create a trickle effect to book two. And so that's a good thing. Author Ray Zemer wants to know, what's the best way to jumpstart online book sales for a book that's kind of leveled off? Doing ebook promotions, Amazon, Facebook, BookBub ads, testing all of those where you're getting some kind of daily marketing, even if it's very non-aggressive and you know, really low budget, you're starting to kind of build a little bit of impressions and getting your book's book page visible again, and that can kind of start to create some sales here and there and start getting the daily sales and some consistent sales. Ray also wants to know, how does an author end up with overstocked books or return copies, or a publisher, I guess, if they're print on demand? Well, print on demand doesn't have anything really to do with return copies. Whether you're a print run or print on demand, if the book is returnable, if we print 20 copies and send to a Barnes & Noble, Barnes & Noble sells 5 at a book event with you as an author, then they return 15 copies. Well, yes, we are print on demand, but those copies have been printed. So they get returned, and that costs us a chunk, and can be very damaging towards our royalties and an author royalties. And limiting returns is something that we work hard at. Some authors don't always understand this, and they kind of abuse it. And Barnes & Noble managers aren't always really good at, estimating the right amount of books to order. And so, my advice is always focus on online sales. And if you really do want to do indie and national bookstore signings, do some research and some data and see how many people you're going to have there, and talk to the relations manager, talk to the indie bookstore owner and figure out a respectable number, and maybe the store can order 5 or 10 copies, and then the author bring some copies just in case you sell out, and that way you've got copies you can supply. But just having an indie bookstore order 50 books, have a big stack, and then you sell 3, we have to inherit those costs when those books are returned. And we have to warehouse them or destroy them or, use them for some other promotion. But the having a lot of overstock is not necessarily a good thing in any way. Podcast interview author Bill Percy, who we had a few podcasts ago, the author of the Monastery Valley series, wants to know what have I and our staff found to be the most potent and robust combination of marketing packages. And I think for me, I think the best answer is just a good collection. I think it's whenever you kind of do a little bit of ebook giveaways, Amazon ad, Facebook ads, enters your book in awards, NetGalley, getting all of these things rolled into one, where you're getting multiple, channels of publicity and readers seeing your book, hopefully enjoying your book and sharing that enjoyment, that word of mouth with fellow readers, and having all of that just come together, where every time you do a new promotion or stack on some promotion, it gets better and better, because they can, a new reader who sees your book for the first time now may see, oh, it's got all of these Amazon Kindle reviews already, or they may see it's won an award or you've been a finalist. And so those all factor in, and I think they can lead to the, your best chance at selling the most books. Author Kimberly Tilley Would like to hear any insider tips on how we can optimize Amazon. So the best tip I can give you for optimizing your Amazon Author Central page and having your Amazon Kindle page and everything, you know, be very appealing to readers and you know, hopefully readers will click on it and having a really high chance of conversion, is to look at best-selling authors that are in your genre or write similar books and look at their pages. You know, go look at their editorial reviews. Go look at their author bio. A lot of people reference that more than the Amazon author pages, more than anywhere else, more than your Facebook, more than your, especially more than your website. So make sure they're up to date. Make sure they're entertaining. You know, if you have a really entertaining, good author bio there, someone might read something in your author bio that relates to them, which would make them more likely to seriously consider reading your book or not. So I think just look at comp titles and comp authors and do your best to, you know, see what their page to you looks to be more appealing than your page, and see where you can improve. So that is it for our podcast questions for this round. We are going to get straight to the interview with author Dan Lawton. Our guest today is Dan Lawton. He is an award-winning literary suspense, mystery, and thriller author from New Hampshire. He is an active member of the International Thriller Writers Organization and the New Hampshire Writers Project. By day, he's a copy editor and copywriter for an ad agency. Welcome to the show, Dan. How are you doing?
Thanks, Reagan. Doing great. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. I'm in the middle of obviously doing Black Rose writing work, and we're also doing a little bit of a remodel to our existing house and home office areas to try to expand a little bit. So I got the dual projects going. So
never a dull moment, as they say.
That's it. So far we've had, you know, several authors on the show. Most of the authors we've had are either non-Black Rose, you know, pretty veteran author, or a Black Rose writing veteran author. So this will be a fun, you know, fun chat from a little bit different perspective of a new author, at least for Black Rose writing. And so tell me a little bit about your publishing journey so far.
Yeah. So it's been quite a few years now. I think it was 2013 probably when I started pitching around my first novel. So my first couple novels, I tried to get an agent, which didn't work out. And so I ended up self-publishing them. And I learned so much about the industry, everything from book formatting and distribution to editorial, to cover design, and you name it. So it was a fun experience for a couple of books. But I wanted something more than that. So for my third novel, I started shopping around again, and I almost got an agent. We had gone through a couple of rounds of rewrites, and then the particular agent was interested, but she couldn't get buy-in from the whole agency, and so they had to pass, which was a bummer, but what you can do. So, but I ended up getting a publishing deal with an indie press, and then for my fourth novel, I did the same, a different press, and for my fourth, I actually had an agent for a while. One of the biggest ones in the country, actually, at Trident Media Group. So we did a deal at one of the big publishing houses, but my manuscript was on the desk of some of the editors, and so that was pretty awesome, regardless of it not working out. And then for this most recent one, the fifth one, I shopped around quite a bit and had a few offers, and after some discussion with you, I felt that you were the best fit. And it looks like I made the absolute right decision.
Yeah, I hope so. And I'm
very excited about this project. There's no, so far there's nothing that's come back from our end that doesn't lead me to believe that we've got a chance to do well, and that I think readers are going to really enjoy your upcoming novel, The Green House. So when did you start writing?
Oh, I started writing when I was really young. For me, it started as writing songs, which is kind of funny because I can't sing at all. But I thought I could at the time, I think. But yeah, so I started with that, and then that turned into poetry, which was really just making my songs into poetry and submitting those to poetry websites and contests, which I won a bunch of them and stuff, and so. That was fun for me. That was before I was a teenager, probably. And then, yeah, I morphed into an interest in journalism, which is initially what I went to college for, which turned into more creative writing. I had some short story workshop and a script writing course where I got to create an outline and write an entire movie script from start to finish in the whatever it was 13, 14 weeks of the course. And that was like my first experience of really finishing something. So it was amazing. And then I started my first novel the following summer. I never went anywhere, but I creatively been writing for a long time and written professionally for a while. I wrote user manuals for heavy machinery like wood splitters and stuff, and then engineering proposals, and now I've been editing and writing ad copy for the last couple of years, and so I pretty much write all the
That's great. The consistency, I think, helps in anything you do, staying on top of it. And then, I think I'm sure you've noticed, but as you keep writing, you go back and read things that you wrote several years ago, and you're like, man, that I don't know who wrote that, but it's pretty poor.
Yeah,
So.
I try not to go back and read my own stuff for that reason.
Yeah. So. I've got, what do I get? What do you have a writing process that you like to, you talked about kind of writing consistently, but do you have any specific processes that you use for putting words to the page?
Yeah, so I've heard that there's basically two schools of thought on this. One being writers who outline extensively and break down each chapter. I definitely don't do that. I'm more of the seat of the pants writer. More recently, I've had more success with like a is like a short vision outline where it's if I know a chapter or two ahead. That's usually more than enough for me to go on. Having some idea of the ending is helpful, but it doesn't always work out for me that way. Yeah, I mean, back my first few novels, I used to write every day, meant a couple hours every night, but life's gotten really busy, that's changed. And so, I've written five, technically six of my sixth manuscript is done. And so I've kind of figured out what it takes for me to write one. And so I can write spurts. I wrote like 6,000 words in a couple days to finish up my last manuscript. So, it's kind of wing it, fake it till you make it, as they say.
Yeah, I was pretty much always a very, write in spurts. I'd write 15,000, 20,000 words in a few days, and then it would be like a month I wouldn't write a word. And so that's kind of how I, yeah, wasn't consistent, which I wanted to be. But if it, I mean, sometimes it seemed like when you tried to force a page a day, sometimes you just, I mean, I guess different writers, different people do things differently, but for me, it just seemed like it was mediocre. So I would rather let it just kind of flow.
Yeah, there's
But
been so many days where I'll just sit there and have the computer open and have the blinking cursor for 2 hours and write nothing. And so, yeah, I mean, you can force yourself to do it, but I usually wait till I get inspiration, which so far I haven't had a lack of inspiration. So keep rolling with it till it doesn't work, I guess.
Yeah, Neil, what are you currently reading right now?
I am reading, I forget which number it is. It's either the sixth or seventh Myron Bolitar novel from Harlan Coben.
That's a good choice there. I just finished the Stormlight Archive number 3 from Brandon Sanderson, Oathbringer, and it's the epic his epic fantasy. The fourth one comes out at the end of this year, and they are I finally wore down. I burned through the first two are all they're all over 1,200 pages. The first two I burned through, and then there's a companion I read that's like 300 pages, which like whenever you're reading 1,200, like 300's like, oh, look at this little companion he wrote. And so then finally the actual book three, it just got real slow. I just couldn't, it was like, man, I'm not making any headway. Like my Kindle says, like I went up, 1%, like after every reading session. I'm like, oh, it's gonna. So finally finished it, not because it wasn't good, just think I finally wore down just a lot of words. But it was good, and I just started just on kind of a I think some of the favorite authors that I have recommended. I don't even know where I heard about it now, but I knew I heard about it. But it's called Unspeakable Things by Jess Laurie, and it's the first book I've ever read of hers, and it's like a dark suspense. And it's like 296 pages, and I was reading it the other night, and I couldn't go to sleep and just kind of kept reading. And it's like when I got done, I'm at like 14% or 18% or something. And it's like, oh my goodness, like this is, like you forget what progress is like after you read a 1,000-page epic fantasy. I'm like, man,
I
this
can't imagine.
took a few days, and so we'll go on to the next.
Yeah, I much prefer shorter books these days, I find. There's just so many things I want to read. Like, the faster the read, the better. And so I can keep moving through them. I can't imagine reading a 1,000-page fantasy. I just can't imagine that.
Three in a row. So with the companion, it was over, it was 4,000 plus of Brandon Sanderson before I moved on to a different book. So I've got
How
to
long
like
did it take you to get through one of them?
the first two I really read fast for me. I'm not sure the exact time, but I think I read one within 2 weeks.
Wow.
And then two probably a little longer, but then three just got to where it was really. It was probably like about maybe a 50 to 60 days or something to finally get through book three. Might have been even longer than that. It killed my little Kindle reading goal little thing was I was way ahead of pace, and now I'm like right back on like, hey, you need to read more books for 2020. And I'm like, yeah, but you're not factoring in that I just read three books that averaged 1,200 pages a book. Like factor that in, like. Put that in your, how many books are you going to read this year? So, but yeah, so what are some of your other favorite authors?
Yes, I mentioned Harlan Coben, who I'm reading now. My other favorite, he's been my favorite since I started reading, really, is John Hart. He's a little more, he's not as well known as some of the other suspense writers, but he won back-to-back Edgar Awards, and it was a while ago now. And he comes out with a book, it's like every 2 or 3 years, which isn't quite fast enough, but I always look forward to him so much. Otherwise, I'm really more of a book guy than a writer guy. And so I have a lot of books that I like from a bunch of different authors, but Coben and John Hart are the two that pretty much whatever they put out, I'll read.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think it's funny how, like you said, you're more of a book guy. I think there's always, it's interesting because I'm a very author person, and so it takes a lot, or just something has to really trigger for me to read, like this Jess Laurie book. Like it took me a lot to commit to it, and the length of it helped. I like this kind of story, but it's still like I'm one of those. It's like, okay, I've got here's my 12 or whatever 15 authors, and it's like, when are they releasing something new? Like, when can I get something new? I've read all of their stuff, and so it's hard for me to break outside of that because people are like, oh, have you read this author? And that's like, no, I don't read very many authors, but I've read every book by these authors, like Stephen King, every book, Joe Abercrombie, every book, like I've read them all. George R. R. Martin, every book, but and he's never going to release another book. So, yeah, I saw George R. R. Martin posted on his recent Goodreads blog that he wrote three chapters and like was so pumped and don't get excited because he's still got a long ways to go. And it's like, I just don't understand like how. Like where the Phantom or where he thought he was going to release this book like 2 years ago. Like, I mean, it's amazing that it's like, no, I've still got a long ways to go. And it's like, yeah, but this book was slated for release like 2 years ago. And you're telling me you just wrote three more chapters and you've got a long ways to go. And as we're in 2020. I'm like, I don't know. I was hoping if anything positive came out of the coronavirus, it'd be that George R. R. Martin was forced to finish writing some. Tell me a little bit about obviously I know a little bit, but from your words, if you want to tell me a little bit about your upcoming release for Black Rose Writing The Greenhouse, and also what's tell me a little bit about what's next for you as a writer.
So the greenhouse, it's deeply personal in a lot of ways. It's pretty dark, and so it took me about 2 years to write, which for me is a really long time. I wrote a novel in 3 months once, and so to give you some comparison, this one it digs pretty deep into the psyche of an older man. And so the inspiration came from a real place. At the time I began writing it, I had a close relationship with somebody who was really struggling with mental health and depression. And so I had a hard time understanding what this person was going through. And so, like, as a writer, the best way I could try to understand was to put myself in this person's shoes as a character. And so I exaggerated a little bit and had the character as a elderly man rather than a non-elderly man. And, and fictionalized the plot, but the emotions that he experiences and the thoughts, they come from a very real place. The things that I saw from being close to this person. And so I put those thoughts into the character's mind and wrote through his journey. And so the general concept, it came from that, but I was stuck for about a year. I had a plot, but there was something that was missing, and so I kind of just stopped working on it for a while. And then there was one night I was putting my daughter to bed, and I had it just clicked. Like, when you stop thinking about the ideas is when they come back. And so there it came to be a larger concept of utilizing flowers. And so somebody likes to read the story to understand because it's pretty detailed, but there's seven flowers in Gerard, who's the main character in his greenhouse, and one flower represents an emotion. Each day of the week is a certain flower that represents an emotion from his story, which we learn about as the story unfolds. So basically the message of the story is hope. This for a better future and for healing and understanding, but it is pretty dark in a lot of ways, but it's personal and it's real, and a lot of the early readers have really got it and really enjoyed it, and it's won awards, been a finalist for a couple other awards, so people are getting it. But the pacing is slow intentionally, and it's definitely literary, and so the writing is designed that way. And so going forward, my other books haven't been, the pace haven't been that slow. I wrote one book called Amber Alert that was a really good combination of literary suspense. And so what's next for me is back to those roots. And so for the first time for me, I'm going to be writing a three book series. All my other books so far have been standalones. And the first book in the series is done. It's called That Was Before. I'm about halfway through editing it right now. I'd finish it probably sometime March, maybe February, March, and put it down for a while. And I'll put you on the spot here, Reagan. But I plan to publish with you the whole series if you have me back, of course.
No, I mean, sounds good to me. Of course, I mean, we would just send it when it's ready. We'll be happy to take a look.
Yeah, should be pretty soon, a few weeks, I would think.
Awesome. And I think that's always the timeliness. I was talking about it earlier, doing some podcast questions is, you know, one of the, like some authors say, like, how do I, you know, what's a good marketing strategy? You know, I've written one book, and it's like one of the best marketing strategies is write another book, especially
For
if your
sure.
first book has been well received, but it's you've kind of hit a wall. It's like write another book. I mean, that's I mean, I've done book signings, and if you have one book, people can buy one book, but if you have more than one book, some people might buy more than one book. I mean, it's pretty easy marketing. You have more things for people to buy. So yeah, keep on writing. So that's, I'm excited, you know, to check out the upcoming series. So what is, you know, an interesting fact about you that readers might enjoy hearing, or, you know, any of your writing quirks?
Yeah, I mean, I think about this a little bit. I think a good quirk that might intrigue readers is that personally, I wasn't a reader until college, really. All the books that we had to read in school, I had a hard time connecting with and having a lot of interest in. And so, like, I was pretty sour on reading for pleasure pretty much my entire life until during college. I worked at a Radio Shack back when they existed, actually headquartered in Texas. And so I had a lot of free time sometimes at night when it was in the mall, nobody's around. And so I started bringing books to read. And that's when I found John Hart and then really learned to love reading. And so I think that's pretty interesting. A lot of writers that I hear have always been readers from a really young age, and that really wasn't the case for me. Other quirks, yeah, I'm a vegetarian by choice and a sports lover. Unassuming, they make myself laugh every day, and I'm pretty proud of it. I'm an introvert, but I'm not shy. I just don't know what to say in a lot of circumstances. And most importantly for me, I'm really happy, and I thrive on positive energy and good vibes, which is also interesting because I do write pretty dark. So maybe that's how I express those emotions. But I'm pretty energetic person, and I love life, and yeah, I think I'm probably around most of the time.
Awesome. Yeah, so I can't tell you the town anymore, but my wife and I went and visited some friends of ours. They lived north of Boston, somewhere outside of Boston. And we went maybe somewhere around Peabody. That sounds familiar. Beverly, somewhere around there. And they took us right to the border, right where we were just inside of New Hampshire border from Massachusetts. And we ate at a like fresh, you know, they had fresh lobster and everything, which I'm sure there's plenty of those. But just seafood, everything. We ate at this place where you pick your own lobster and then they just crack it and you eat it right there. So that's my only New Hampshire experience. So I was probably within 3 to 5 miles of the border of Massachusetts. So that's my only taste of it so far.
Yeah, it's a different world.
But yeah, it's crazy when you're like looking at the lobsters and they're like this, then the biggest one is like $22. And you're like,
Right.
22, it's fresh out of the water. And you're like, $22. If I was in San Antonio, Texas at a nice restaurant, that lobster would be, $75, $80. I mean, there's a different price tag. So, but yeah, I wish I could recall the name of the small town. I tried to look it up earlier, but I could not remember the name of the town I was in.
Let's see, there's Salem's on the border. Wyndham's pretty close to the border. Derry,
I
they're all
mean,
kind of big towns, though. But
yeah, no, it wasn't even a big, like it was literally like you went past the sign entering New Hampshire and we turned off somewhere and went to a place within, I mean, it was within 2 miles of like the border. So, I mean, it wasn't even a, we didn't go to really even a town. It was just like a restaurant somewhere.
yeah.
So, but yeah, so that was pretty cool. But yeah, I've got our short story section ready. If you're ready, we'll do some fun rapid fire questions and we'll call it a good podcast. What do you think?
All right, it's far away.
Favorite thing to do when you're not writing?
Probably get some sort of exercise or watch sports or reading.
Do you have any pets and what are their names?
No pets. I had a chocolate lab pit bull mix. He passed a couple years ago. His name was Mooney.
And is there a sentimental, like you don't want to replace him yet, or is it just you just don't have any right now?
Yeah, I'm not ready quite yet. It's a hassle, as I'm sure dog lovers know. But I miss him, and my daughter talks about him all the time. So sometime in the near future, a couple of years maybe, but having a break, not having to get up in the morning and go outside when it's -2 isn't the worst thing in the world. So.
I can't relate to that. I live in South Texas. We have 3 dogs and they stay happily outside and they require very little from us. They roam, they go on their own. So
Yeah, different worlds, like I said.
name a place you haven't been but someday want to travel to.
Oh man, I haven't really been much of anywhere. I'd really like to go to Italy, I think would be pretty high on my list.
I'll go ahead and tell you that you should go to Italy. That's my wife and I want to return to Italy. It's high on our list to go back. We went there maybe about 10 years ago and just really enjoyed all of it. And I think like we enjoyed the big city, like going obviously like to see the Colosseum and Rome and Florence and those places are just like you have to go there and Venice. But if we go back, we probably won't go to any of those. It would be more of like we really like the Amalfi Coast and like Sorrento and like the really like the small town feel and just where you can walk around the corner and eat just really great food. And it's so relaxing. You don't have as much of the heavy tourism. It's more like a light tourism and locals.
Yeah, no, that sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah. So, but one of our favorite little things was every time we went in like a not souvenir, but like a store that had really nice, Italian, maybe like custom dishes or anything you would buy as a tourist, like specialty shops and clothes. If you'd go into the nicer stores, it was like it seemed like there was always somebody. If they realize like, ooh, these people might be, they might buy something over $5 or whatever the amount was, they brought us a lot of times, like it was a, like a fresh squeeze, like right there, they would squeeze it and bring you like a glass that was like half orange and half lemon. So like orange, like a lemonade, but with orange in it, orange juice. And they were both like, just press squeeze right there and bring you a glass of that. And I'm like, this is the greatest thing ever. Like, I could drink.
Right.
Like, yeah, I wish every store, like in America, like I wish I'd go to a store and they'd bring me a fresh squeezed glass and something. I'd buy stuff from their store if they did.
Yeah, can't go wrong with feeding people for sure.
No, for sure. You leave a good impression. But yeah, Italy, yeah, you should go there. All right. So sports fan, like you said, I've got that question for you. Favorite sports team?
No question, it's the Boston Celtics.
Okay, well, at least you didn't say the Red Sox, but I mean, Celtics is meh.
I am a Sox fan, although I must admit my interest in baseball is growing less by the year. The pace is just too slow for me these days. And I'm a Patriots fan as well, but
I just like watching. I go to bed the baseball. Like, I mean, I just, there's something. Like you said, the pace is perfect for, like, you lay down and you watch baseball, and then when you fall asleep, no big deal.
Great point,
but
yeah.
My family grew up baseball, and so, yeah. There's a few things they could definitely, you know, improve upon, like you said, to just speed it up a little bit. Where the other sports get hindered by not the speed of the game, but the speed of the awful advertising that they have, that they want to fill the games with. Cause it's like the football game is actually, you know, the time it's actually being played, it's like, it's an hour and 50 minutes but it's 4 hours to watch a game. Cause you've got 2 hours of breaks and commercials and stuff. And it's ridiculous.
Yeah, like if it's a touchdown, we'll do a touchdown, then an extra point, then a commercial, then a kickoff, then a commercial, and then you're back. It's brutal.
Yeah, it's too much. So are you is Larry Bird one of your, I mean, is that one of the big names on your favorite athlete list or no?
No, Larry was before my time. I grew up like, I was born in 89, and so like, what I can remember is like the Paul Pierce, Antoine Walker, and then when we got to championship level, when we had Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen and Rajon Rondo. That was my life right there.
Yeah, I've never been like actually Celtics anything fan wise, but I can watch Larry Bird videos all day. So. Favorite city in the United States?
No, I'm going to keep up with the theme, and I'm going to go with Boston.
Favorite food in New Hampshire?
So, New Hampshireites would be very disappointed, but I don't like seafood, and so I don't involve myself in that situation. But there's a restaurant called The Crown, which is walking distance from the office, and they have this kale salad. They massage it with their hands, has a little bit of olive oil, and some sunflower seeds, and Parmesan cheese. It is just like, it's off the charts. Like, anybody who listens, I'll tell them about it. And so they should probably start giving me royalties, but we'll get there.
You're speaking... I'll get my wife to listen to it later and she'll look it up. You're speaking her language. You're not speaking mine on the kale salad. Like I was hoping, and obviously you said earlier that you are a vegetarian, but yeah, I was hoping you were going to tell me the best lobster you've ever eaten.
Yeah. And I had lobster probably 3 or 4 years ago now for the first time since I was a kid. I just couldn't do it still. Just doesn't do it for me.
I understand. So I appreciate you taking the time and coming on, Dan. If there's anything else you'd like to plug or add, please feel free to do so.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. It's been a lot of fun. I'm not sure when this will air, but you know, the greenhouse is launch date is July 30th, and so it's coming up. Been building toward it for well over a year, and I'm excited to see how it goes.
Thanks again for tuning in to the Heard It Through the Rosevine podcast. I will be at the Hondo, Texas Wellness Fair on Saturday, August 1st, and give away over 150 copies of books for a promotion to stick in back to school giveaways and backpacks. And so hopefully help some people find something really new to read that they enjoy. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks.